So welcome back to the Scottish Curling Podcast with me, digital lead Peter Joyce. I am here with Paralympic gold medalist, world champion, and now a key part of Scotland and hopefully, fingers crossed, Team GB's wheelchair curling team, Joe Butterfield. Do I need to call you Joe Butterfield MBE?
Or no,
do you
please
casually don't like that? So from the top of the podium in Rio 2016 to chasing a medal on the ice in Milan Cortina, Joe's story is all about reinvention, precision, and the relentless pursuit of excellence. So you've already heard her laugh at me multiple times, but Joe, it's brilliant to have you with us.
Thanks, it's good to be here.
One thing I will say before we start, and we had a bit of a chat about this before, but we've agreed that while your story has been shaped by some traumatic experiences and hospital visits and moments that I know you don't want to go
Definitely
through,
not.
You've gone through them millions of times, whether it be on podcasts or videos or chatting to me when I'm pretending to be miserable about the weather and you're like, get a grip here. We're here to talk about you as an athlete.
Sounds good to me.
So we're going to start with Rio 2016. So gold medal around your neck. What do you remember about that competition, that moment?
That moment, it's hard to explain. I think when I think about that moment, I think about just fulfilling what we set out to do. So like when I first started in athletics in 2014, pretty much the first conversation we had was about Rio. And it was that there's a possibility here that we could do something really special if we knuckle down and work really hard. So from that first competition in 2014 right through, it was everything was geared around getting a gold medal in Rio. So I think when I sat there on top of the podium, it was a real, almost relief, if I'm honest, that it had worked. Everything that we had tried to do had worked.
You say relief. Is that a weird feeling? Because, you know, when you reach that pinnacle, you would think that you'd be overwhelmed with joy, with, you know, everything you've worked for has come together. And the first word that you've used to describe it there is relief.
Yeah, it's a funny one. I guess it's in that moment. It was such an overwhelming challenge that it was relief. I think as then time goes by, you come back and you start to do a few celebration things. That's when the joy comes into it, you know, and you're like, yeah, it's pretty special.
At that moment, are you just thinking ahead for the next one?
Absolutely, yeah. Sport is a very strange world. We're already, you know, yeah, we're thinking about Milan, but I'm already then thinking, well, when's the next one after that? When's the next one after that? It's really hard sometimes to stop yourself and make yourself think about where you're at right now and what you're actually trying to do. I was in Rio celebrating a gold medal, but we had London 2017 a few months later, and that was a home games, the World Championships that had not happened, but you know, it hadn't happened like that before. So we were back at the Olympic Stadium, and it was the conversation went straight from a Paralympic final to, well, what's next?
So at which point on that journey do you think curling?
Not then, if I'm honest. It's hard. Like, so I don't know, a few of you all know Nigel Hull, and I met him through Scottish Athletics. And so when I was on this mission to get a gold medal in Rio, I had this man chipping in my ear a few times saying, have you ever thought about curling? Have you ever thought about curling? To which I was politely, oh yeah, it sounds really good. Secretly thinking, yeah, no. I'm not there yet. You know, I'm pretty busy at the moment. It's not something that I'd even really thought about, if I'm honest. However, there was a little bit of me that always thought it'd be pretty special to do a summer and a winter Paralympics.
What do you think it was that Nigel saw in you that was different? Because, you know, it's a tough place to get through that, into that pathway, into that program. And not only to get on that program, but to be a bit of a mainstay in it, which you are now. What do you think it was that Nigel saw in you at that point?
I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I am built a little bit different. And yeah, we talk, you know, we're not the things that we're not talking about, but I think my life story has built a huge resilience in me. And I don't say no to things lightly. And if I set my mind on something, then I'm going to make sure that I do everything I can to get it. Yeah, I wake up every day saying, what can I do today that's going to help me get that gold medal in Milan? When I first started athletics, I woke up every day saying, what am I going to do today that's going to help me get that gold medal in Rio? And I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm not saying that I do, you know, don't do anything like normal stuff, but I am wired purely focusing on what I need to do.
So with that sort of mentality behind you, the first time you get on the ice, is it still weird?
The first time I got on ice was very weird, yeah. But I saw it as a huge opportunity. Like, my athletics career, for want of a better word, was kind of cut short without my choice. My event was taken out of the programme for the next cycle. And I was kind of left not really knowing where I went. And I remembered that little man in my ear saying, what about curling? So I thought, you know, why not? So actually the first time I got on ice, I was just excited. I thought, there's a chance here that I can continue. You know, I can still be this athlete and, you know, do something special.
How do you deal with having been the best in a sport? You've got a gold medal. And then you get onto the ice, and I don't think curling comes naturally to anyone. So there must have been times where you're thinking, I am miles away here.
Most days.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, you've competed at World Championships, so that can't be true. The first 10 times, how do you cope with that and suddenly being
I think that's
a
where
newbie?
Curling is a funny sport, and it's quite easy to be okay at curling. You know, everyone can push a stone down the ice and occasionally it'll stay in the rings. It might hit a stone out and you almost feel like you know what you're doing. That's how it sucks you in, gets you interested in and excited about it. But then you quickly realise it's very, very hard to be good at it or to be very good at it. We're talking about milliseconds, inches, millimetres difference. And to be so precise, particularly at wheelchair curling without sweepers, that's very, very hard. And I still and often do come off the ice thinking, like, I'm miles away from where I need to be. I think that's also what drives me. When I was a thrower, it was an individual sport, and that passion and drive was about improving myself every day. And that's what I'm trying to bring to curling as well. It's like, I'm not there. I'm nowhere near where I need to be. But what do I need to do to try and get that little bit better every day?
And you've talked there about moving into a team sport. How do you shift your mindset? Or how did you shift your mindset? Going from very individual, self-driven sport to the ultimate team game in curling.
Yeah. I think it's the one thing that I thought would be the hardest. And I'm not saying it wasn't challenging, but I think I've realised I'm more of a team player than I realised. And in athletics, you always have a team. It's just not there at the same time. The team behind you that supports you and gets you to where you want to be. So I think I took that mentality into it. It's frustrating at times when I can only control what I do. And I'm not saying there's other people not pulling the weight. I don't mean that, but I can't change what they do. So that was a big mind shift for me that I had to sort of almost like trust them. I had to learn to trust my teammates to make sure that, you know, believe that they were doing what they needed to do. But it's also nice to have that support. Like a whole year out when I was getting some sort of treatment, to have a team to be able to look at, to go to and talk to and be with and be around really supported me at that time. And I think trying to have that same atmosphere, ethics on ice at the same time, that's going to, you know, help us to achieve what we want to achieve.
How do you foster those relationships? How do you build it while trying to win?
Good Scottish banter. We're very good at slagging each other off. You know, having a laugh. You've got to be able to have fun with one another. You've got to enjoy what you do. We train a lot of hours together on ice, and, you know, if you can't have fun at the same time, there's something wrong. But also, I think I'm trying to be more vulnerable. I'm trying to be more honest and open with people, and that helps. I think if we can trust one another with how we're feeling and what we're doing, then that's what's going to get us through them hard moments, you know, when we're not doing well in a championships or we're struggling with something, to be able to like open up with one another. And it's just having deep conversations as often as we can.
And how would you say the team at British Curling helped that? Because, I mean, you must see Shug and Gary more than you see your wife, Rhiannon. So how do they help protect the relationships that you've got with each other but also still push you to drive on and to achieve the things that you've managed to achieve in such a short space of time.
Like, there's so much support. You know, we've got, like, professional help. We've got sports psych. We've got people there who are fostering these relationships and helping us build these relationships and pointing us in the right directions. But it's also opportunities to go away and travel together. Like, we were recently on the Grand Slam competition. Having that week together where you're eating together, you're having breakfast, you're doing your social stuff together as well, that fosters time and relationships and makes them easier. It's not all about curling. I think that's important. Like, yeah, we're on ice together for a lot of time, but it's really important to be able to go and have a coffee and have a chat about, well, what you doing? What do you do at the weekend? You know, and trying to actually get to know one another properly. And I do think that the programme being centralised in Stirling really helps that. We've got 17 on programme now, so it's hard to try and get to know 17 people, but that's the fun part of it. You know, that's where we try our best.
Looking ahead, we will get to, you know, the, not the elephant in the room, but, you know, that's what we're all aiming towards, the same thing in Milan Cortina. But how have things changed? You know, curling's a pretty peculiar sport, certainly on the para side, that you're all competing for individual nations and then you all come together. Is that difficult? Is it like adding new people into a family? Like, you know, it's like,
I think everyone thinks it's difficult. Everyone likes to have the Scotland-England rivalry. And we joke about it ourselves, both sides. I think it's pretty ironic that I sit here as a Yorkshire bird competing on the Scotland side. But I've lived here over 20-odd years, so I don't feel out of place, if I'm honest. But we're all working really well together. You know, we train together as England and Scotland. Anyway, when we are competing for world championships, so I think that makes it easier. And the number of times I've had a conversation about, well, this year we're competing for Great Britain, so we're all one team, but then we always turn around and say, well, do we really need to have these conversations? We're just training, you know, we're trying to be wheelchair curlers and be the best that we can. So beside the banter and the there's nothing wrong with slagging each other off every now and then, it's all good.
Looking back, let's have a bit of a chat about your time competing in Scotland. We'll get back to the GB side of things because I really want to have a bit of a chat about that. But we'll look back to Scotland. So people always talk about Scotland punching above their weight curling-wise. You know, we've got the men's world gold medalists, women European bronze, the Hugh and Charlotte winning mixed silver doubles. In the mixed doubles. Do you feel that when you go into an event that, you know, you're representing this country that's got this great history on its back and that you're the next one to sort of uphold that legacy?
Yeah, I mean, I think particularly within curling, the one thing I was really sad about in athletics is I never got to compete for Scotland. My event was never at a Commonwealth Games, and so I remember being a big part of Scottish athletics and them really helping me in my career, but I never got to represent Scotland. So when I switched to curling, and within 6 months I was competing for Scotland at a World Championships in Canada, it was really special. It's the first time I'd ever done that, and I didn't expect there to be many firsts after having so much success in sport already. So that I thank curling for. And then when you realise how special curling is to Scotland, to Scottish people and to the country of Scotland, you go to Canada, whereas curling is huge, but they look to Scotland as the home of curling. And that's when you realise how special it is, like, to have your name on the back. I never had my name on the back of my shirt before in athletics. I had a bib on the front. To have my name on the back of the shirt wearing a Scotland flag, it is very special.
And when you hear that anthem for the first time at World Championships,
first of all, I'm thinking, let me please remember the words.
What does that feel like? What are the emotions going through you? It must be different from that relief that you talked about from winning.
Yeah.
Is it just like overwhelming, or does it just
It's a good anthem, let's be honest. Yeah. It's a good one, it's a good tune. And I think what curling does well, we honour countries, so it's not about who's won the medals at that stage. Every country gets honoured and you hear your own anthem. So, yeah, at that moment, it is pride. I'd been curling for less than 6 months and I had a lot to learn about curling. But I'd been in many environments similar to that, but that one was pretty special. You're on the centre of the ice, cheering out your own anthem with people in the crowd cheering as well. You realise what it means to everybody at home, all the support staff that are with you, and how much everybody's worked to get there. And it's the moment I want to hear more.
I want to talk a bit about the team dynamic that you've got. And obviously you've got Hugh has been your skip for most of the time. How does he lead, and how do you feed into that? How is that for you?
he has so much knowledge in curling that I will always respect that, and just I'm a bit of a sponge when I'm around him. I'm constantly asking questions, hoping to try and get a tiny bit of that knowledge. But we're very different people. He's more serious probably than I am. I'm a little bit more jovial, and I see things very glass half full, and he's probably slightly more glass half empty. But in a strange way, we complement each other quite well. I think we keep both each other accountable. The one thing we share is our passion and desire to be successful and to work hard and to do what it takes to be successful. So we can respect each other in that way. But I think I lighten him, which helps. Sometimes
did that
quite
take
serious.
Time?
Oh, yeah. Like, I curled with him. I was fortunate enough to be at the first World Champs with him and the second as well. And it's been a journey, you know. At first, it's probably more fear. That sounds a bit harsh. But fear of doing the wrong thing, saying the wrong thing. You know, this guy knows so much about curling. Whereas now, I wouldn't say it's quite level. I still have a huge amount to learn from him. But I'll question him and I'll say, well, what about this and what about that? And we'll have a conversation on ice. That's one thing we've been working on a lot this last year, is to make it more conversational, to make it more of a team working together, not just, you know, Shug leading from the front and telling us what to do. Like, we're not going to get very far like that. We need to be, you know, working together.
Has that changed how your team meetings go and how those situations are? Because it sounds like maybe it was a little bit top down before.
Yeah, I think that there's in the past it's been, especially even from coach to athlete, it's been very coach driven and almost spoon fed. And people, you know, what you need to do, this is how it's got to be done. And we're really trying to get a culture of it's a team. So when we have classroom situations where we go in and we'll put video on and we'll discuss it, you know, we'll work out, what was that the right call, or could we have done something else, or what do you think about that? And I'm really enjoying how they are becoming very natural. You know, we go into these classrooms and it's not just Niall or Sheila talking. It might be me and Shug having a chat about it, or Charlie jumping in and saying, what about this? And it is becoming like second nature, which is quite scary, but it's good.
Of course, as competing for Scotland, the pinnacle must have been Auchinharvey, the World Championship on home soil. For the listeners, Joe has just grimaced at me as I said that.
Pinnacle, it's a hard one.
What is your memory of that? Is it?
My initial memory is it was a failure, you know? Like, as hard as it, there was a lot of good to take from it, and it was a great opportunity and all of the things you meant to say, but we didn't get out of the group. And not only did we not get out of the group, we had an opportunity. If we won our last game, we would be through. And we didn't win that game. So, you know, ultimately, we didn't succeed. We didn't achieve what, you know, we wanted to do. The first job was to qualify for Milan, which we did. But we didn't finish it off by performing as good as what we could have. And so I see it really as a disappointment.
So when you look back and, you know, loads of your friends, family are there in the crowd, do you almost forget about that?
To be honest, yeah. Like, as you can't help but look back and say, yeah, okay, it was a good opportunity. It was nice to have people there, and thanks to everyone coming. But I don't really remember that. I actually remember, oh, what a shame. It was a missed opportunity. Like, we were playing well enough to get through, And then once you're through to the knockout stages, anything can happen.
Do you see as part of that that your success is going to be one of the main drivers for para curling, para sport in Scotland? Is there an element of that? Or is it what it meant to you?
I think selfishly, probably at that moment, it's what it meant to me. You know, like, I genuinely believe that we missed an opportunity. We beat Canada on the first, China on the first day. Like, that almost proved we could beat anybody. But then we lost to teams that we should have won. There were games there we should have won. There's a real question about how we perform potentially under pressure. And that pressure moment is, you know, where we failed. And I think setting a mark at that World Championships would have really been the stage to set us for Milan. You know, you say to the world, look at us. You thought we were nowhere. We got relegated last year, but look where we are. And I think we started that conversation. You know, we did a good show of ourselves, but it's disappointing because it could have been better.
I think that's a good opportunity for us to start talking a bit about your mindset, because I think it's pretty undeniable that you're wired a bit differently. Because for me, I think if I rocked up at a home World Championships and did pretty well, I'd be pretty happy. So to hear you say that, I think you're clearly wired a bit differently than...
I think I am a little bit sometimes,
the normal person. So what habits and routines do you think that you've learned from your time as an athlete that you've maybe brought over to curling?
I think it is that there's two things that I almost have, like, never let a door be unpushed. Like, I'm always seeking that next thing. So what is there that I can do more? You know, it's never settle. Like, it's really easy to get comfortable. Oh, I'm doing quite well here. You know, I'm training every day and I'm pushing 10 stones, whatever that might be. Everything seems all right. There's always room for improvement. And it's like always pushing on. It's always seeking to get more. Like, never settling for okay. Like, we did all right in Okanavi. You know, we actually worked well as a team. We ruffled some feathers and won some games that we shouldn't have won or didn't think we would have won, but we didn't do enough. And I think that's that. It's that mentality. It's like, okay, we're doing all right, but what more can I do? I'm always looking for that little bit more.
Is the only measurement of success for you then winning?
Yes and no. I struggle with the question of, like, what am I trying to do now? What do I want to win? And if you ask me what my measure of success for Milan is, I'd say a gold medal. However, I caveat that with what I can control. I actually can't control whether I win a gold medal or not, but I can control that I perform to my best. And if my best is good enough for a gold medal, which I believe it is, then that'd be good. But if it's not, then I can't control that. Does that make sense? It's not always my caveat for success is gold. My caveat for success is doing my best and making sure that I know that I have not let any stone unturned.
How do you control having that mindset and it becoming overbearing on you and the others, but at the same time remaining motivated? Because if you lose that, it would be probably pointless. A lot harder for you to drive yourself.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it goes back to that every day. Every day I wake up thinking, what can I do today? So that's my motivation. That is my drive, that I am still on a journey and I'm on a journey to get a little bit closer every day. I'm not there yet, but every habit that I have and every day that I have, I can get a little bit closer. I'm also passionate about making sure that curling or being an athlete isn't the entire me. I think if it is, you're on a very sticky wicket, and it's really hard because times can happen. I know it very well that you're taken out at the last second. I was out for a whole year, and you had no, you know, you have no control over that. So I think it's really important to have things outside of it that bring you joy, happiness, make you grounded. It doesn't take away from being driven. It just adds to it, and, you know, gives you more of a purpose as well.
Do you think you've got better at that over time?
Without a doubt, yeah.
Having spent a lot of time with you socially, I think there's most of the time, if we end up talking, we end up talking about curling.
Yeah.
How do you... Do you have to sort of force yourself to take yourself out of that?
Yeah, I think you do. I think you have to make sure that there are other things in your life, be that, you know, I baked bread this morning. I've got a camper van and I love going travelling in a camper van. It doesn't take away that every day I still think about curling. Every day I still think about achieving at the Paralympics. That is what drives me every day. But I can have joy in other things too. So when that's not going well, I'm not a miserable person because that's not going well, because there's days I'll come out of training and it was awful. But if that's the only thing that I had in my life, then I'd be a pretty sad person. But I've got lots of good things in my life that, you know, carry you through until actually, okay, let's get back on that curling.
So obviously all of this is pointing towards Milan Cortina.
Yep, the big one.
No, you haven't been selected.
No.
So there's still a lot of work to be done. And a lot of processes to go through, a lot Absolutely. Of curling to be played. What is the preparation like, knowing that you're essentially competing with the rest of the team for a spot?
It's pretty much the same as ever, you know. Like it's that making no stone is unturned, doing everything I can. Like I can't control whether I'm selected or not. In theory, as in I'm not on the selection panel. There's 17 of us, and there's going to be more people unhappy than there is happy. However, I can control that I do everything that I can to make sure that I'm on that plane. Everything I'm in control of. So I make sure that I do the right sessions at the right time. I do my best at in the gym and the preparation at home and all the other stuff off the ice, to know that when it comes to that conversation, my name's in there. And if it happens, brilliant. If it doesn't, I want to be able to sit there thinking, well, I've done everything I can. And it's better people that have got over me.
How important do you think your experience of a Paralympic Games is? I know it's a summer games, different sport, but how different is a Paralympics it's to huge. World yeah. Championships?
It's absolutely massive. And I don't think anybody can understand that until you've been. Everyone talks about it's a different level. Things that you would never normally appreciate, you know, the media intensity. And actually, I can imagine a Winter Games, although it'd been a lot smaller than a Summer Games, curling is much bigger because there's only a few Paralympic sports, especially on the British side. So suddenly curling are thrown into the limelight. Wheelchair curling is huge for that period. So you are going to be massively in the spotlight. And having been to a Games, I feel more confident because of that. Having been in that environment, I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be successful in that environment. I also know what it's like to be unsuccessful in that environment with Tokyo. So I feel that I do bring that knowledge and that experience that hopefully will help me, but also help the rest of the team. So just at that time to be able to, you know, hand on the shoulder and say, it's all right, I know what it's like.
So let's look ahead and say you're selected and you go. Is success a gold medal?
Yes.
Is that the only success?
I don't think so, no. It goes back to that what I can control. As a team, I think we are, our success is a medal. Personally, I'm only there for the gold medal. But it goes back to about with that caveat of, if I've done my best and someone's beaten me, there's not a lot I can do about that. I'll be happy with doing my best. And hopefully that will then bring, and I believe it can bring, a gold medal.
So, you know, one of the most important things that's happened recently... was the Grand Slam of curling.
How very exciting, yeah.
Their first wheelchair invitational. I'd love to hear how it went from your side of things. How travel, yep. The event itself, so yeah,
start,
go for
like,
it.
To start, it was huge. Like, to be part of the Grand Slam for us is something that, as a wheelchair curler, I don't know that I ever thought it would happen. So it is big. And I think we all knew that it was big. Like, we want wheelchair curling to grow. And I think that the Grand Slam of curling is the way that it can grow. We need to get more people seeing it. We need to get more people feeling and experiencing it. More people then participating in it. And hopefully that's how the sport will grow. So, yeah, to be invited in the first place was massive. And as soon as we knew that there was a team going, I was like, yeah, I want to be part of that. To be there at the start would be pretty special. So I was well pleased to be selected. And I think everybody that got selected felt the same. It was a long way to travel, Canada. I love curling in Canada. There's always a crowd, which is not something we're very used to. And on arena ice, again, we hope for something like that at World Champs and occasionally get something close to it. But the atmosphere, the crowd, the noise was more than what we ever normally used to.
What is the scale like? Because you're watching back from home and it's hard to see beyond the bananas. I'll be honest with you. I'm pretty obsessed with the bananas. Is it just so much better to play in?
Yeah, like it is a full arena. So you've got all the shebang, you've got seating all the way around. The ice looks special. You've got scoreboards at both sides, you've got a crowd, you've got music. It's noisy as anything. Completely different to anything that we're used to. I imagine that Paralympics will come close. It's a similar sort of feel to what I would expect the Paralympics to be like. But it's very, very special. And I think we all were very aware of how special it was. Canada, Italy and ourselves. And we wanted to put on a show, you know. We had a good week at Kitchener. The ice there was more of a normal, it was a normal curling rink. We still felt pretty special. Everyone was excited about the prospect. But when we got our first taste in the arena, that's when it really came to life. We went there on the Thursday for media. Again, we're made to feel very, very welcome, very part of it. We had the same headshots and media shots as everybody else. It didn't ever feel like we were a second, like event almost, which was good. And then we watched a couple of games and got on the ice at the end of the night after for some practice. And that was almost, dare I say it, probably better than the really shambolic final that we had. But we were on ice competing in mixed teams with able-bodied and ourselves, and that was pretty special to see their excitement. Like some of the guys we had, I was on with Hammy and Grant, and they were sweeping like their life depended on it. You know, they were sweeping our stones like they really cared.
But we're talking about that competitive mindset.
Absolutely. It was not just for fun. This was, we wanted to win kind of thing, and we did. So yeah, that was really special to see. And I think what I also liked is at the end, when we finished our couple of ends, they were given an opportunity to get in a chair and try wheelchair curling, and they were all up for it. You know, like not just, or almost, you didn't get the feeling like, oh yeah, I'll do this just because I feel like I should. It was, no, I want to do this and I want to see how hard it is or what it really feels like. So that was pretty special. And I think it was the same across the countries, you know, with the Canadian girls and things like that as well. So having us all together was good.
And it's that inclusion, that real inclusion,
yeah,
that's going to grow the sport, right?
Oh, massively. You know, like being at the same place at the same time is huge, but actually being on ice at the same time in a mixed team, that's, you know, that to me could be the future, you know. It really is. I think curling is very special in a sport that everybody can do, no matter, you know, what your disability is, female, male, any sort of different ethnic minorities and all of that. Everybody can do curling, can curl and can curl together. So I do think that's very special and unique, really. So seeing us in that environment together as a mixed team, I think that's, you know, a possible future.
As somebody who's never been to a Grand Slam, so if anybody at the Scottish curling marketing team wants to send a certain reporter over, please do. But somebody who's never been to one, what is the atmosphere like? Is it more like a sort of traditional football crowd? Is it
it's
very traditionally curling?
No, I'd say there's a bit of a mix. It's quite rowdy. You've got the bananas who make a lot of noise. And then you've also got the serious curlers who kind of know what they're looking at and what they're cheering for. I think for me, you felt special. You felt like you were important. You felt like you were somebody. You felt like an athlete. You know, I was there, rocked up, and like people knew who I was. People knew who we were. We were the wheelchair curling team. And you could see that they were there because they cared about curling, a lot of these Canadian crowd. It's not something that we're used to, but it's what we should be getting. Like, you know, we're athletes who train every day and train hard, equally with all the other athletes. And I think it's important to get that recognition. And we want to try and grow the sport, and hopefully that recognition kind of continues worldwide.
So what you're saying is we need to get a Grand Slam in Scotland?
Absolutely. Yeah, it'd be awesome. Like, going from any other competition that I've competed in my life, like the British fans are pretty special when they want to be. They come out and cheer really loud, and you know, I think Scotland would really get behind a Grand Slam, and you can see it now, you know, all the tartan faces. We might have to come up with a new banana, but I'm not sure what it'll be, but I'm sure we can, you know, the kilts might have to come out and all of that, but I think it'd be pretty special.
When you think about the future of curling, and a bit more specifically para curling,
yep,
what do you think the future of the sport is?
Ooh, good question. It's such a new sport, and I think that we still need to grow it, and classification has got to be part of that. I know they're reviewing at the moment, and everyone will have an opinion on who should and shouldn't be able to compete. I think what we need to make sure is that we give opportunities for more people. And there's a lot of people out there who want to curl and maybe can't at the moment. So I think we need to get that piece right to ensure that, you know, more people may classify. But also I think there's opportunities there, like we've said about the mixed curling. So wheelchair curling is brilliant, and I think that needs to stay, but why can't we have ambulant para curling or VI curling or different disabilities coming together, you know, to form a mixed team? So we have a couple of wheelchair curlers and a couple of ambulant disabled curlers. You know, let's think outside the box and try different things.
Because as you say, I can't think of many other sports that are as genuinely inclusive.
No, I think you're right. Or could be. You know, I think it is, you know, I know plenty of people with different disabilities that do compete nationally, but they don't have that international option. So I think there's a challenge there to try and find options for different disabilities.
What advice would you give to somebody who's maybe from the outside in looking at, and not just curling, but mm-hmm. parasport generally?
So like the new Joe B.
Yeah.
The person that's just been injured. Like,
you should do my job.
It's something I'm quite passionate about. Like, sport has given me so much in my life. It's given me, you know, a reason to carry on. It's given me that avenue to be successful. And it scares me that para sport isn't growing the way it should. And actually, we're probably becoming more able para sport. So only those that are minimally disabled are getting options to compete at the highest level, and that disappoints me a lot. So I think that from an organiser's point of view, we need to make sure that para sport remains true and that we keep giving more opportunities to every disability, not those that just look minimally disabled and look more able. From the person that's just been injured, like, my biggest advice is to say yes. Like, there's a number of times that I said yes to somebody not knowing what that meant, with fear of what it might mean or where it might take me or how I might look stupid. But if I'd never said yes, I'd never be sat here now. So like, don't let fear overtake. Say yes to the opportunity. Give it a try. You never know where you might get.
Do you see yourself as a role model? Because I'm now ready to run out to my car and go to Lanarkshire Ice Rink and get myself ready for the Alps in 2030. So, do you see yourself as...
Not particularly. I don't think I do anything, but I'm just me. But I can appreciate that what I do and what I've achieved and who I am, if that can help somebody else think that they've got a future, they've got a, you know, something bigger to strive for, then yeah, let's bring it.
When you do look back, I don't get the feeling from the conversation we've had that you do a lot of that.
Not really.
How do you see your legacy?
Ooh, good question.
Obviously, you're still writing it. How do you see that legacy?
Ooh. I think it is just that I never gave in, you know? So I want to leave this world a better place than I came to. And in particular, in para sport. So when I started and what I was given options to do, I want to make sure that the next Joe Bitterfield has more. And I've helped that process in whatever way that might be, whether it's as a role model or actually in the boardroom, making sure that we're not excluded. You know, I'm quite passionate about making sure that para sport is in that conversation, that there's somebody at the table to make sure that conversation happens and we don't get ignored, because it's really easy to ignore us and forget about us because we're so small. But we can't let that happen. You know, we have to make sure that we're constantly on the agenda, trying to grow. Like curling, we have a world championships every year, which is brilliant. Other than that, you know, we've had an invitational at the Grand Slam. When do we get our tour? When do we have a wheelchair tour? When do we have a wheelchair Europeans? All the things like this, you know, we have to make sure that wheelchair curling is on that agenda at World Curling, at British Curling, at Scottish Curling, at everything curling.
Is that why your role as an athlete rep is so important?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, as I say, I feel that it's got to be driven by somebody, and if it's not driven by us, then nobody will. So, you know, I've breathed and dreamed it myself. I was Joe Butterfield in the hospital thinking, where is the future? What can I do? And people gave me an opportunity to do things. So I want to make sure that I'm there pushing for the next person.
And for Joe Butterfield, what's next? Because club throws back on
the it's a really hard question to answer when we're still in the nitty-gritty of trying to get to Milan. But yeah.
Is it just all eyes on Milan?
At this very moment in time, it's all eyes on Milan. Like, I'm not going to lie. But there's a little glimpse.
Is there a Nigel on the shoulder?
there's a Nigel on the shoulder, yeah. Obviously, I spoke briefly that athletics was ended shorter than I would have asked, because my event was taken out of the programme. Fast forward a cycle, and the club throw and discus have now been put back in the programme for LA. And I'm not going to lie, there's a big part of me that's very excited by that. Like, I ended it before I wanted to. I wasn't ready to quit athletics. And I'd love to go back and make sure that I end it on my terms, not the sports terms, or decision makers' terms. So, yeah, I think the future is Milan. Post-Milan, maybe a bit of both. Like, I'm not ready to give up curling. There's a couple of gold medals there still to be won. But to do both at the same time, I think so, a good opportunity, a good challenge.
So, Joyce has been great. We always ask our guests some closing questions.
Okay.
Red or yellow stones?
Red.
Blank ends, yes or no? Quite a prominent time because the Grand Slam have just limited it to one at the next Grand Slam, which anybody who follows Scottish curling social media will know that
controversial.
This marketing team loves a blank
end. You love a blank end, or you
love a blank end?
You love a blank end. It's quite strategic as a blank end, let's face it. It's part of the sport. We don't have that many in wheelchair curling, so I'd be quite happy with the one, to be honest.
Funniest teammate?
We've not got that many that funny. Probably, no.
You can say yourself.
No, I'm not going to say you were going to that. No. Funniest would probably be Niall. I know he's not a teammate, but he's just, yeah.
Best opponent, hardest opponent.
Hardest opponent. Person or team?
Both.
Canada, Mark Addison. He's just consistent. It sounds awful, not massively flashy, but he does it consistently well.
And best moment in curling?
Best moment in curling is first World Championships, 6 months into the sport, getting a bronze medal in Canada. I didn't dream to even slightly be at that stage. And we dug deep as a team that week. Probably were not expected to come close, and we got a medal.
Brilliant. Well, all eyes on the team.
Yep.
Heather Cortina, and fingers crossed that you're there.
Thank you. Fingers crossed all around.
And speak to you soon.
Thank you.
There we have it. Big thanks to Joe Butterfield for joining us. We'll be back with more episodes of the Scottish Curling Podcast soon. Please remember to share this with your friends, family, and anywhere you get your podcasts. See you next time.